urban renewal indebtedness defined adequately so that there won't be any problems?
Yes, in the statutes, it very definitely is. Urban renewal is actually a point of view. Indebtedness also is used in Article 9, Section 1C.
Does that mean public indebtedness?
He said that it wouldn't be new construction.
Public body indebtedness rather than private indebtedness.
That would be indebtedness of the urban renewal agency.
You're satisfied.
That'd be a nice wording to add down here, that you pick it up when it's released. We could define it that way though, and it can really come in.
Problem with it, because I didn't realize that Article 9, Section 1C actually used the term urban renewal in it, and permitting that type of financing.
Okay, Ira, if it was the desire of the committee to have that new construction's effect on the tax base delayed until the end of the bond period, or until it went on the rolls, would you have to change this, or would that be carried in the accompanying legislation?
No, I would have to change this. And that would be a tremendous job. I'm thinking of what happened in the South Auditorium, urban renewal area in Portland. As I recall, I think that started in almost before it became, I think it started out as a project in about 1957. At that time, the legislature enacted the enabling legislation and finally concluded that there needed to be a constitutional amendment to make sure that those statutes would become constitutional. So the constitutional amendment, I believe, was submitted to the people, I can't remember, it was by a 57 session or 59 session, and it was approved. Construction really didn't get started on the project until sometime in about the middle 60s, and the bonds were paid off somewhere in about the middle 70s. Now, a lot of things happened to pay off that increased value. A lot of it was because property values, due to the economy, increased just because of rises in market value. A lot of it, a great deal of it, was due because of new construction. Now, I don't know whether the legislature, and I hope not, if you want to have the whole thing go on and increase the tax base, that'd be fine. But if you're going to try to separate the new construction from, you know, the economic value, and you have a project that lasts over 10, 15 years before it pays off, it's going to be a lot of record keeping for somebody.
Yeah, okay. Well, is there any other limiting ideas besides the one that Senator Troa suggested to a the last voter-approved level plus 6%. Okay, could you work on that for tomorrow's meeting, and we can take that up first thing? Okay. Not the latter part of your discussion, but what we discussed. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll take SJR 4 up at the beginning of our meeting tomorrow. We have the amendments on 283?
Yes.
Okay. Senate Bill 283, procedural changes on sale of tax foreclosed property. That's Senator Hanlon's bill. Mr. Penhollow had worked with Senator Hanlon on that. Okay.
Bill here?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Bill, did you want to come up and explain the amendments?
Where are they?
They should be being handed out to you right now.
Are they behind your bill?
No, I don't think so. They just brought them in.
283-2?
Oh, somebody just handed them. So.
Is dash 2 the store?
Yes.
You got one copy.
You guys got to get together yet? Why don't you share?
Okay, Bill, why don't you tell us... Do you recall this is the bill that deals with the property being advertised in the 1930s and then sold in the 1980s without re-advertising and trying to get notice to people between. Why don't you tell us what you came up with?
Chairman, members of the committee, Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. The amendment would deal with those properties that remain unsold sheriff's sale. And the amendments would do two things. One, it would say that in the year following the sheriff's sale, in which the property remains unsold, in order for the public agency to dispose of that property at a private sale, they would need to re-advertise the property in a newspaper of general circulation, printed and published in the county, describing the property, describe the manner in which bids may be submitted, and stating that the time and the place of the meeting of the county court at which the bids to purchase the property would be reviewed and the sale made, and then prescribing a 15-day delay, indicating that not earlier than 15 days after the publication, properties then may be sold at a regular meeting of the county court for transaction of county business. And then a new, the bill is going to be divided into subsections as opposed to the way Senate Bill 283 currently is. And the final subsection would provide that in no way would this preclude the county court from entering an order asking the sheriff to go through the normal advertising auction process to dispose of the property, if that was deemed a better way to end it. It's both options.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Drinstead.
What would you do in a county that doesn't have a newspaper?
Packing on the telephone.
Only in East County.
Yes, there one.
Yes.
Yes. There's a provision published, printed and published in the county.
You should ask my question.
I believe there's a statutory provision dealing with that. That may be something that we need to check into.
You could say circulated in the county. There's a newspaper circulated in the county.
We could change that by saying printed or published.
What line is that on?
Line 15.
Published or circulated.
Circulated.
Printed or circulated.
Right, or circulated.
Well, it already does. It says of a newspaper of general circulation. Oh, printed and published.
Posted or published.
How about that? In a newspaper of general circulation in the county where the property is situated. Take out printed and published.
Well, I think you probably want it in there. I don't think you want these advertisements in the Oregonian, which might be circulated in every county. But I think maybe what you want to say is printed and published in the county where the property is situated. Printed and published when possible in the county and in the county where the property is situated. The when possible would then qualify the one county that doesn't have any. But otherwise, you want it printed and published in local, I would think.
There's a provision now dealing with the sheriff's sale requires the same kind of publication. And I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's check on that because if you've got a throwaway weekly in a county, that may not be the paper people read either.
Right.
So you might want it in a paper that's published in another county next door, but is the daily that's circulated. So there must be a provision for that because that's standard language, I believe.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
Okay.
While Richard's looking for that, he called another item to my attention that had been added after I looked at this. In line 20, that sentence there spoke to the committee's concern about having a general description, a layman's description of the property rather than and bounds or a legal description of the property. Line 20 will provide that. So it's a description.
Is there a problem with that language, you say?
No.
Okay.
That's something that I overlooked when I went through it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McFarland.
Good bill should pass.
I wonder, and I don't mean to be difficult, it seems to be my day for it. But I wonder if that might at some point be used as a subterfuge, or actually disguises what property they're really talking about. See, whenever you talk about common descriptions or maps which shall be designed and built by the property and managed intelligible to laypersons. I wonder if there are not occasions where that may very well be a subterfuge. Particularly, I'm thinking of a situation like a large tract of forest land or something, and not a bunch of identifying roads or other residences or anything. You're trying to pick out which section you're talking about in there.
I think, Chairman, Senator McFarland, I think as a general practice, and really as an amendment here, we would have no objection to having the legal description as well as, I think that's what Columbia County indicated.
That's what I would like that better, as well as.
For a prospective buyer, they might get an idea of where the property is, but then they would want to define that property, and the only way to define it would be with the legal description.
How about this now, Chuck? Instead of put by the, but put as well as the use of common descriptions.
Yeah, I think so. This is the end we want to achieve.
Right.
Legal description, followed by a narrative description.
Right, so as well as would do that better than but by, because there are occasions. Today, I don't trust you.
Okay, so you'd simply eliminate the language requiring or exempting the legal definition, add that the legal definition be in, as well as a common description.
The description of the property contained in the notice describes the property in legal terms as
okay.
well as the use.
Okay. Okay, any other issues within the bill? Okay, we have two. One, that language, which Rich found is the same language that currently applies to sheriff sales, requires it be published and printed in the county. Could be mandating a new newspaper and just a little bit.
I think that apparently there are other statutes. Maybe it's the local budget law.
It could exempt. It's possible that exempt, but what I'm wondering is if the cross-reference to that exemption does not include this language, we may be creating a section of statute where there is no exemption, if in fact there is an exemption currently to that.
All right, Rich, what's the recommendation in safari location in the county?
All I was doing is checking the statute, and the sheriff's sale language is the same as the language you have here. So the sheriff in ORS 275120, it does say that the sheriff shall publish a notice of sale of such property in newspaper of general circulation, printed and published in the county where the land is situated. I think that's exactly the language you have here. The question is, I'll see if there is some other provision which provides a ability for a county that doesn't have a newspaper to use some other paper that's not printed in their county.
Apparently it's not been a problem thus far, though.
Unless there's an exemption somewhere.
Yeah.
We'll look for that. Okay. Let's not spend any more time on that. It's just a matter of looking and finding. On the other issue, the description of the property contained in the notice, Senator McFarland's suggestion is that we continue to require a legal definition as well as a common description to identify it in lay terms.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is there a...
Mr. Chairman, lines 20 and 21 and 22 then would read...
And 23.
The description of the property contained in the notice shall describe the property in legal terms as well as the use of common descriptions and maps, and then leave out that shall be. That's totally unnecessary, and just designed to identify the property. Description of maps designed to identify the property.
Okay, would you read that once more?
Okay. The description of the property contained in the notice shall describe the property in legal terms as well as the use of the common description or maps designed to identify the property in a manner intelligible to the layperson.
Mr. Chairman, I think you need a by in there as well as by the use of common descriptions.
You don't need a by in there.
Or alternative language that I would have there would be after legal terms and also by the use of common descriptions or maps designed to, you have to cut out the show. She said take out the show. I think you do.
Two school teachers.
Okay, let's We will.
I'm George Clinton guard type. I believe it's straightforward.
Could we get that in amended form by tomorrow? Okay.
Anything worse would be three.
Okay, we will. Is there objection to, not that specific language, but is there objection to requiring both the legal notice and a lay notice? Okay, being none, we will amend it to, and it'll be so ordered that those amendments be prepared. Okay, the other we'll research for tomorrow to see if there is an exemption. Bill?
Yes, I it is, Elaine brought this up to me, 193.020, dealing with publication. Sub 3 says, if no newspaper is published within the county, city, district, or jurisdiction, public notice shall be published in the newspaper nearest to the county, city, district, or jurisdiction where the action, suit, or other proceeding is pending or is to be commenced or had.
Okay. Does that reference particular statutes? Does that statute said referring to? That is, does it need to refer to?
As used in the statute laws of this state, unless the context and the especially applicable definition requires otherwise, public notice means any legal publication that requires an affidavit of publication as required in 193.070.
Okay, well, we'll check and make sure that would affect this language as well. And those amendments will be ready for us to handle right after SJR 4 tomorrow's meeting. Okay, thank you very much. Senate Bill 316 needs no amendments. Exempts clergy from withholding of income tax from wages. Rich, again, tell us, can you, do you have a recollection of exactly the option this gives the taxpayer in this case?
Well, remember, we had a discussion of this bill in the first hearing concerning Oregon not having estimated payments and the federal government having estimated payments, the clergy under the federal code being exempt from withholding, but they are subject to estimated payments. And this bill, in effect, would exempt them from withholding and again subject them to estimated payments within Oregon. So the revenue effect is very, very small. There was a discussion in your first hearing being concerned about the definition of a minister and being concerned in terms of that fitting the federal code. Ted DeLuce was asked to look at that. He did. He thinks it fits fine. The other concern that was raised is really the concern over sort of religious order and the potential definition of getting into quasi-religious activities rather, and there really isn't any recommendation from Ted on that. That's just a struggle in the law itself.
This does not exempt them from any liability anyway.
No.
It's simply
just
how they pay
it.
Okay.
Senator Monroe.
You ready to move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, over Senator Monroe's objection, I move the bill to the floor.
Okay. Senator Grimstead.
One quick question. I sat in on a committee this morning having to do with bingo, which Senator Monroe is aware of. We heard a lot of testimony about, and we had testimony from two different detectives, that each one of them now has a minister's certificate. How far are we going with this in connection with our present bingo laws, where gambling laws, if you want to call that, where people can get a certificate for $20 from a church in California and me be an automatic minister, and will that exclude him from having to have his
pay from that order would then could potentially pay on an estimated basis as opposed to withholding, which he could already do at the federal level. It would not reduce his tax liability or shelter him from tax liability or her.
But,
that's right. Him
but he wouldn't have to withhold.
Pardon?
He would not have to withhold. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Seems like the language on page 2 is fairly specific, that you just can't have a statement saying that you're a minister. It's in the order of the exercise of duties required by that order.
Well, if he has to run the bingo game, that'd be part of
anything.
Yeah. be part of the exercise of church and Monday night football.
He has to be licensed, and the state licenses. We certify our license ministers, don't we, somehow?
Mission for a license.
When you go to a wedding, they say, and the authority granted me by the state of Oregon?
Well, he's licensed, but one time.
Okay.
You must declare what county you registered in.
Yes, you registered. Okay.
I don't think it'll make an overall.
Yeah.
If some of them will be used.
It would be, yeah, an income from.
We'll catch it anyway.
Yeah. Senator Hanlon?
Did we delete the language on lines 26 through 29, page 1?
No. We took that out?
We took that out.
We did in another bill somewhere, but.
I don't remember taking action on this bill.
Yeah. Conflict amendments are resolved.
We don't need to move to take it out here, too?
Okay. It'll be taken out by conflict amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I missed the hearing on this bill. I wonder if Senator Monroe could just explain why it's needed.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, very briefly, it's simply to conform practice to the federal with respect to ministers, and so as to allow them to pay their state tax in the same manner in which they pay their federal tax. Uniformity is what we're looking for. If a minister, for example, uses an accountant or H&R Block or whoever, it's going to cost him less if his federal and state are both figured the same way, paid the same way, and so on. It just seemed like a reasonable conforming thing. With respect to the points made by Senator Jernstedt, he knows that I'm very concerned about that because I'm the one that drafted the bingo bill to try and alleviate that problem. I would hate for us, however, to refuse to pass this bill, which is needed by the hopefully more than 95% of ministers who are legitimate and practicing their profession. I'd hate to see us mess things up for them because there are a few who may be abusing that privilege.
And remembering that this does not shelter them from a tax liability.
Yes. Not in the least.
They just pay on the estimated tax.
I hadn't realized the feds did.
Yes.
Okay, Senator McFarland's motion then is before the committee. The language on lines 26 to 29, page 1, will be handled by conflict amendment. Is there further discussion? Not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Vote.
Say aye,
Chuck.
Senator
McFarland?
Aye.
Senator
Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Stroud?
Aye.
All right, motion stopped. Pardon? Okay, farm tool exemption, Senate Bill 398. Jim, you're going to give us a report on where. And before Jim gets here, let's decide. Come on up, Jim. Let's make sure we understand what direction we're going with the bill. First of all, it was at least my intention that we were trying to clarify. We were trying to clarify farm tools and equipment that was used in servicing farm equipment. We're trying to clarify it and not expand exemptions into the some other areas. Now, is that pretty much the understanding that we have?
That was my understanding.
Okay.
When I introduced the bill.
So what we're trying to do as a committee is to clarify this so that we have some ground rules, and we're not trying to write into the law new exemptions and bring in new things by confusion. Okay, Jim?
Essentially, you have three sets of amendments before you, I think, dash 4, dash 5, and dash 6. And 5 and 6 are in virtually the same, so you really have two different concepts. So, it's point 4 and 5. Dash 4 in effect keeps much of the language in the current exemption and was the result of a meeting of about, five or six people as a result of two meetings ago of yours that attempted to make specific
typically exempt those items that are commonly being exempted that farmers own in most counties in the state. Now, some counties, Polk County in particular, some of these tools have been at least attempted to be put on the rolls, and in fact were, I guess, in some cases. And that set of amendments, dash four, would exempt those things that are probably in most places being exempted anyway. In dash five, expands on that somewhat. And specifically, dash five removes all the language in the original bill that, you have the original bill there, removes lines 8 through 14. In other words, all the language that relates to personal property owned by farmers that are included in the term inventory, and replaces it with what's in dash five. In effect, dash five says items, in other words, gets away from what's in there now, which says farm machinery and equipment, such as any items, that are used, that are owned by, in possession of, or under the control of the taxpayer, so in fact owned by the taxpayer, that are used by the taxpayer primarily in the animal husbandry, agricultural, or horticultural operations or combination carried on by the taxpayer. So in effect it says anything owned by the taxpayer and used primarily in agricultural operations.
Okay.
And I think the key term there is agricultural operation or horticultural operation or animal husbandry operations. And clearly this set of amendments does expand it somewhat from dash four. And I think the question that the committee had the last time was to what extent it does that. And I attempted to sort of call around, talk to assessors, talk to the department, talk to people, and try to decide to what extent that was true, and try to put a, I don't see any way I can put a dollar on it, but just to try to get a feel for that. And I think my main conclusion is that I know talking, well, it's not going to overturn the state's assessed valuation, that's for sure. It would not be a tremendously large amount, but there is some, I think what it really boils down to is that there's a substantial amount of uncertainty. And it's primarily in the term agricultural operations. That is really the key set of words in dash five.
It's kind of like the farm use designation.
And just as examples of things you might, or where the questions might arise, in my mind anyway, one example was, it's brought with a full-time farmer, the guy's a regular farmer, who buys fertilizer in bulk and resells it to his neighbors. And he's got this particular one had $14,000 in scales and loaders in his barn that he was using in this reselling operation. It's currently on tax rolls. And so the question would be, is that items owned or in possession of the taxpayer used in agricultural operations, and therefore would be exempt. The second case was a family co-op that has a grain elevator, and they, of course, the family members store grain there, and they also lease or allow others to use it for a fee. And in this case, it was a 90,000 bushel elevator that had about $10,000 worth of equipment in it that was on tax roll, personal property.
Okay, just a minute, Jim. If that being the case, the assessors, if a family farm owns that warehouse, uses one quarter of it, but uses three quarters of it commercially, is the whole thing on the tax rolls at 100%? Or do you try to determine what percentage of it's used in that particular, or is it just considered a commercial operation? Thanks,
my understanding is that in this case that all of that value is on the roll, and secondly that this is a case, if you look at the original bill, which contains some of the original language of the law, that the personal property involved in storage are past the point of harvesting a farm crops, and therefore are fully taxable. In other words, the current language there in subparagraph A says, inventory means farm machinery and equipment used in planting, raising, cultivating, or harvesting of farm crops. Well, this is personal property that's not used in any of those. It's used in the storage of them after they've been harvested. And so, therefore, they are taxable. And in particular, in the dash 4 amendments, we have put in there, after harvesting, serving, or placing